You're listening to Faith and Fostering, the podcast where people of faith chat about foster care in the Australian context to encourage, edify, and educate others along the journey. Welcome to another episode of Faith and Fostering. It's Lucas here with you today. And today we are coming from a very exotic location in Nairobi, Kenya. And you can hear the sounds of Nairobi in the background here as we're on location. And so that's cool. Today I have a very, very special guest to share a really, really impactful story of transformation. Mike Kitajima, welcome.
Yes, hello.
So good to have you with us today. Thank you.
Great to be with you.
Thank you for coming on and having a chat.
Yeah.
Now, we kind of connected a little bit through email, just loosely through another organization we work with.
Yeah.
We're here as a part of a global leadership, a global disciple-making movement conference. Mm-hmm. But today we want to talk about your story.
Yeah.
And we want to talk about, because you shared your story a little bit, which I didn't know any of this.
Yeah, so we kind of knew each other sort of on a semi-casual, right?
Yeah.
Kind of acquaintance, but we didn't really, never had a chance to really chat.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we came here to this conference, and over just having some free time to eat lunch together and talk, I shared my story with you, and then I realized that we had a connection.
Yeah,
we had some things in common, and
absolutely.
Yeah.
So I want to have a chat about that. We're also under a flight path here, so we might get a couple of those the big planes coming through. Yeah. It's all part of the atmosphere. Yeah. So you were born in California.
Born in California.
Raised in Hawaii,
yes.
Living in Hong Kong.
Living in Hong Kong,
and probably had a whole lot of stuff in between there.
So
take us back to the start.
Yeah.
With you, tell us, how did your story begin?
Well, you know, when you and I were chatting the other day, and then you mentioned to me that you that you had a faith-based organization that helped carers for children in crisis and foster carers and that kind of thing. I immediately wanted to share my story with you that I was born in an at-risk situation. My mother was 13 years old. My father was 14 years old. So this is back in 1975 in California. And I guess I'm told by the letter I got from the social worker that immediately my father had said that he wanted to get married to my mom and keep me as her own. But when the foster worker challenged him to go out and find a job, so as a 14-year-old, he tried to get a full-time job and realized it.
How did that go? Was he able to find a job?
No.
As a 14-year-old?
Not even back then in California. You couldn't find a full-time, full-paid job at that age. And I guess he realized that they would not be able to keep me. And so they decided to put me up for adoption.
Right.
And that's kind of where my story began.
So what happened after that?
Well, so just by way of explanation, I am Hawaiian, Japanese, Filipino, Irish, and English. Those are the races that I have inside of me, ethnicities.
Yeah.
Father was, my biological father was Irish and English. My biological mother was Hawaiian, Japanese, Filipino. Wow. So they put me up for adoption. And, you know, God always has a plan. Yeah. And around that time, I call them my real parents. You know, I guess technically they're my adoptive parents, but they're the ones who raised me, so I never had any doubt in my mind they were my real parents. And my mother was from Germany and had come over to America. This is, you know, she'd come over to America to work after World War II. Right. And I'd been in America for a while. She was just a little girl during World War II. And my father was from Hawaii, and he was born and raised in Hawaii of Japanese descent. Yep. A lot of Japanese in Hawaii.
Yep.
And so they got married, and back in those days in 1975, that was not a common, there wasn't a lot of mixed race marriages around there. That's what they call them. You know, nowadays people hardly even make a comment. Yeah. But back then they considered a mixed race marriage. Yeah. And so my biological parents asked specifically, you know, we want our son to be adopted by a mixed race couple.
Right, really?
Somebody who, Asian and Caucasian, just like they were.
Yep.
And so my parents had applied for adoption, and back in those days, that was a lengthy process. It could take multiple years waiting to get matched up with a child. But because they were the only mixed race couple in the queue, they came right to the front of the queue, and within a matter of months, they had adopted me.
You got fast tracked.
I was fast tracked. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So and so, what was that like? That process for you? What was that? What did that look like for you?
Well, you know, I was 6 months old when the adoption finally went through.
Yeah.
So of course I don't have a lot of memories from that, but I guess what I wanted to share was, you know, there was a time when the common wisdom was, if you adopt a child, don't tell him he's adopted.
Yeah.
Just kind of hide it, you know.
Yeah.
And people have kind of figured out that caused a lot of damage when people accidentally discovered decades later that they were adopted, and it brought a lot of confusion and. Yeah. Sort of identity crises. But my mother had decided, and my father had decided from very early on, that they would tell me I was adopted, and they would frame it in such a way to reinforce their love for me.
Yeah.
So I've heard those stories of adoption where people didn't feel like they fit into the family, or they felt like somehow disconnected, or felt like they didn't belong. And that's one thing I never struggled with my adoptive parents, my real parents. They told me from the very beginning, my mom had a way of phrasing it. She said, some children are born in their mommy's tummy, yeah. But sometimes they don't even want those children. But you were born in my heart because I really wanted you. I went out and chose you. Some people have children they didn't choose to have.
Yeah.
But I chose you. I went looking for you. And so that's what it meant to me to be adopted. And they kept on explaining that to me from a very young age. And so I never felt weird about it. I never felt strange about it. I always felt privileged, yep. And chosen. Yep. And I think that's a massive thing, yeah.
So how did, so talking about this, you were sharing with how you came to faith.
Yeah. So, yeah, fast forward.
Yeah. Well, we don't have to fast forward. Do you want to continue along that?
Well,
before we jump there? Or?
So my parents, my dad was quite a traditional guy. You know, we had a pretty traditional home. My father was a hardworking man, self-employed guy. And I was adopted in California. And at around the age of 3, my dad really had a longing for Hawaii, where he grew up.
Yep.
Who can blame him?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he wanted to move back to Hawaii.
Yeah.
We moved back to Hawaii.
Yep.
And yeah, dad worked really hard. And he built the house. Where that was, there's still a very rural nature to Hawaii back then. That he went out and bought a piece of property, and that was the community we had in Hawaii back then. When a friend of yours was building a house, on the weekends when you weren't working, all the friends would go and help him build his house.
Wow!
Until it was complete. So I had that memory of actually building your house with my dad and his friends.
That's so cool.
Swinging hammers and painting and all this kind of stuff, you know. And,
yeah, that's awesome.
So pretty traditional house. Mom, for the most part, was a stay-at-home mom. Although I do remember her doing some part-time house cleaning just to make some pocket money, you know. And we weren't wealthy, but we weren't poor. Yep. But when I was 12 or 13, my father suddenly passed away from an aneurysm, a sudden aneurysm. So there was no sign of it. I mean, one day he came home and after work, I have a headache, and within a week he was gone.
Wow.
And so that was a massive shock to the system. This is, by the way, maybe a plug for all of you fathers out there who think you're invulnerable, who think you're too young to need a will. My father was, I don't think he was even 40 years old yet at that point, upper 30s.
Yeah.
But he had no will, and he had let his life insurance lapse for some reason. We to this day we wonder why he let his life insurance lapse a few months before he died. So in America, at least, that means everything gets eaten up in probate, you know. So we lost the house, we lost all of my dad's business, all the equipment that he had that went with his business, and overnight we became a quite at-risk family. Went from being a solidly middle-class family with a lot of stability to being in a at-risk situation. Mom had to go back to work full-time.
Yep.
I became very rebellious very quickly because of the grief that I didn't know how to deal with. And overnight becoming a, we call them, back in those days we call them latchkey kids. I guess a lot of kids, most kids nowadays are latchkey kids. Most families, both parents work.
So just just explain that for those who don't understand what a latchkey kid is.
A latchkey kid, in America, that was something we talked about back in the 80s and 90s, that if your parents, one or more of your parents weren't home when you came home from school, that means you had your house key around your neck. They called you a latchkey kid. Okay. So that's, previously mom had always been home because mom was a stay-at-home mom. Yeah. So I became really rebellious. I realized I was skipping over a lot of things here. Maybe we'll come back.
That's okay, you can come back.
My brother is in the picture here by this time.
Yeah.
And the reason why my parents adopted is because my mother had a hysterectomy as a young lady.
Okay.
And had an infection and had a hysterectomy, which means she was not able to give birth to natural children.
Yep.
So we had adopted my brother in the meantime. And I think so at the time my father died, I was about 12 or 13, and he was around 5 or 6.
Right.
So we were both overnight, went from, being really well looked after to just kind of being on our own, because mom had to work.
Yeah.
Mom had to work a lot. She was trying to save the house,
yeah,
pay the mortgage.
Yeah, it's tough.
And I became super rebellious and got myself in a lot of trouble at school, started hanging out with the wrong crowd, drinking and fighting and all these things that rebellious kids do. And I got myself thrown into a boys' home. So, it was a state-funded boys' home. Well, it was actually a children's home. There was both boys and girls there. But at the time, when I was there, I was the only one. There was only boys there.
Right. So. Yep. So you were a teenager then?
I was a teenager. Yep. I was around 13.
Yep.
And they were Christians.
Yeah.
So this is,
who ran the home, yeah.
Yeah. I could see God working from the very beginning. I knew God, even before I understood what it meant to be a Christian. I knew that there was some kind of heavenly mystery behind how I got placed with my real parents, my adoptive parents.
Yeah.
And I knew that I wasn't answering my mom's prayers. I didn't grow up very religiously. They were mixed, not only mixed race, but mixed culture. The father had been raised in a Buddhist home. Mom had been raised in a nominal Lutheran German home. And the easiest way to deal with that was never to talk about religion at home. It just wasn't a part of our life,
yep.
And yep. So there was something missing for me.
Yep.
And so I guess when we started talking, you mentioned having this podcast and the people that you work with. I just really wanted encouragement. I mean, God worked in my life through this system, both the adoptive system and the foster care system.
Yeah.
Because now I found myself in the foster care system.
Yeah.
And they were Christians. They were not, it wasn't a Christian organization. It wasn't a faith-based organization. It was just a normal government-funded organization.
Yep.
But they had a heart to reach people, to reach young people. And I was there about a week or less.
Yep.
And I just realized I've never met anybody like these people before.
So what was that? What stood out to you? Can you remember? Was it just an overall thing, or was there specifics?
My heart still warms when I talk about it now, because of how it changed my life, There was just a love there.
Yeah.
Now, I came from a very loving home.
Yeah.
They did the best they could, but there's a difference between human love, the kind that just comes from natural human affection, and the kind of love that is centered in the reality that the creator of the universe loves and accepts you and was willing to give everything he had on the cross because he was not willing to go without you. And I could feel that love coming through them, And I needed that love at that time of my life.
Absolutely.
Dad was gone. Mom was, overly challenged, just trying to.
Yeah, it would have been tough.
Yeah, raising two boys.
Yeah, it's tough.
Without a husband, without any financial resources, and starting, having been a stay-at-home mom all those years, entering into the workforce at a very basic entry-level place.
Yeah.
And having to work a lot of hours, and So I needed that love at that time. And I remember asking him, I said, what, you guys are different. Like, you know, I just feel like you really love people, you know, just in a different way. And they said, well, we're, and they were able to be very honest with me. They said, well, we're Christians. We were followers of Jesus. He's changed your life. I said, what does that mean? And then they said, well, we've been born again. And I remember asking them, you mean, were you born a Christian the way I was? And I considered myself a Buddhist, even though we weren't really practicing.
No, but you were born into, you know, on your father's side.
I was around the culture, right, on my father's side.
Absolutely.
And, I'd attended Buddhist temple before, and, right. and I said, were you born a Christian like I was born a Buddhist? And they says, no, it's not like that. And they simply, now this, it wasn't like these guys, you know, Jerry and Debbie, that was their name. I remember their names.
Yep.
It wasn't like they were super like trained ministerial people or had gone away to seminary or had special, they were just
regular,
normal people.
Ordinary, yeah.
Jerry was, I believe, a heavy equipment operator. Like, that's what he did for a living. Like, he worked with backhoes and things like that.
Yeah, we call him a tradie in Australia.
A tradie, yeah. And Jerry and Debbie had been a secretary, but now she was a stay-at-home mom.
Yep.
And they were normal people. They had normal husband and wife fights. They had two of their own biological children, two young girls who were in the house with us, and they had their struggles, you know, with child discipline, and you know, their kids had fits like every other kid has, and things were often messy. You know, it was just messy, just like any other house.
Yeah.
But it was just the presence of God in their life. It wasn't because they were perfect.
Yeah.
And so when I asked them what's different about you, they didn't have this lengthy prepared speech or sermon or, you know, how do I communicate the gospel to a Buddhist, you know, minor.
Yeah.
They didn't have no special training. They just did what any Christian probably would know how to do. They said, well, why don't you read this? And they handed me a Bible.
Wow.
And we opened up to John 3:16. John 3:3. And again, every Christian knows this passage, right?
Yeah.
And they said, why don't you read this? And I started reading through it. And when I came to John 3:3, unless a man be born again, he shall not see the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
Something flooded over me into my soul.
Wow.
This is what I need.
Wow.
You know, and I didn't even know. After my real father had died of the stroke, it was about a year. I was on a journey looking for something. I delved into my Buddhist background.
Yep.
I read a bunch of New Age type books and books trying to figure out the meaning of life, questions about death. What does it mean that we die? Where did my dad go?
Yep.
And I didn't know that I was really what people call today a seeker.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I wasn't in any kind of context. I wasn't near any kind of church context or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was seeking. And when I met them and they said, read this, it was what I had been looking for. And a hungry heart met the love of Jesus through this couple.
Yeah.
This very normal, ordinary,
non-superhuman
couple, you know? Just. And so I, that night, I went to bed, and in the middle of the night, I used to have these terrible dreams after my dad died.
Yeah.
Really dark dreams that evil spirits were coming to get me, that demons were coming. I didn't know what they were called back then, but that the something dark was trying to kill me, like maybe I'm going to die like my father died, you know?
Yeah.
And as I was having this terrible dream, I screamed out loud, and I cried out to Jesus for the first time in my life. And I didn't know, nobody ever taught me how to pray. And all I knew is that I need help and maybe he can give it to me. So I said, help me, Jesus, help me. And after that, all the fear left my heart, all the anxiety. And I can remember, I'm picturing myself back in that room, in that foster home, and a little single bed with these old-fashioned wood tiles on the floor.
Yeah.
And I got down on my knees. And nobody told me you should kneel, but I don't know why. It seemed like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I got down on my knees next to my bed. I says, I don't know who you are, Jesus, but whoever you are, I need your help. And this peace came over me. I went to bed and I slept like a baby. I hadn't been sleeping well since my father died.
Yes.
I became quite an insomniac.
Yep.
And as a 13-year-old boy, I woke up the next morning and I went and knocked on, I couldn't wait for them to wake up. I knocked on their bedroom door, and I said, I'm a Christian. He said, what do you mean? I says, I'm a Christian. I'm going to follow Jesus. And it's not supposed to happen that fast, right? I didn't know anything. No, I've never been in church.
You haven't done the 12 steps, and you haven't done the program.
I hadn't been in the program. Yeah. And they said, well, why don't we take you to church if you want to go? You know, you can choose to go, and you can see if you really want to do that. Yep. I said, yeah, no, I want to do that. I want to do that. And so I just dove in head first.
Yep.
And it transformed my life so radically. Now, I had been drinking. A lot of people drink, but I was 13 years old.
Yeah.
I was doing it not just to feel differently and change my mood because I was depressed. I was doing it to put an underscore my rebellion. Yeah. I knew it was wrong for me to do this. Yeah. I would take it to school and put it in paper bags and hide it, and I'd give it to the other kids. I was trying to get the other kids to drink. And I was just on a bad path.
Yeah.
And my life changed dramatically. I marched down to that church that they started taking me to, and I hadn't been there very long. I heard somebody say that baptism was the first step of obedience. I marched down to the church in the middle of the week and said, well, can you baptize me now? They said, well, we normally do the service. I said, well, like this Sunday? Well, we have one scheduled in 3 months. I said, no, what if I die? I've done nothing to obey Jesus, and he loves me, and he died for me. I was very emotional, you know? Yeah. And I guess that was very convincing. The pastor says, okay, if you're really serious, but you're supposed to give a test. It's supposed to be a public event, a testament. Well, I'll tell the tourists. Let's go to the beach right now. I'll tell the tourists. So it was just such an... I found something beautiful and wonderful and priceless that would never be taken away from me, something that filled the hole in my heart that I barely had known was there. And so they took me down to the beach. I looked at the church. I said, I'm getting baptized. That was my testimony. I'm getting baptized, folks, you know. Pastor baptized me right there. And I don't know what my life would be like today if it wasn't for that. I mean, you know, first of all, that I was adopted and not aborted.
Yep.
Praise God.
Absolutely.
And that when my parents hit a rough spot, my dad was out of the picture and my mother was being deeply challenged, that, you know, the social system stepped and really did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, because I was going down a destructive path. I'm getting the fights at school. I'm skipping more days than I'm going to school. Yeah. And I'm drinking and getting other kids to drink at a very young age. Yeah. You're supposed to help those kids.
Yeah.
And they did. They helped me, man.
Yeah.
They helped me. And I'm forever grateful for what God did.
Wow.
Through the adoptive and foster care system.
We hope you enjoyed part one of this Faith in Fostering podcast. You can tune in for part two next week. And in the meantime, let's remember, every child deserves a family.